Coming up on today's programme, we'll be discussing the ongoing issue of mortgage arrears, the role of the so-called vulture funds, and the reality of repossessions. My expert panel in studio this morning, Brendan Burgess of the Fair Mortgage Rates Campaign, Lorcan O'Connor, the Director of Insolvency Service of Ireland, and Ross Maguire, Senior Counsel with the New Beginning Financial Services. You're all very welcome to the programme. Thanks for coming in. Just first of all, I suppose, to kick us off, if I could maybe just get you to kind of give us a brief, just a very brief synopsis of just your own background and dealings with the issue really of mortgage arrears, and maybe starting with yourself, Ross Maguire.
Yeah, so back in late 2010, early 2011, a group of barristers recognised that the lists, the repossession lists in the courts were increasing. At the same time, we noticed that whilst the banks were lawyered up, often individuals who were facing repossession had no legal representation. And we decided just to provide legal representation on a pro bono basis.
Okay.
And we were inundated with requests for help. We couldn't deal with that. So we decided pretty unapologetically to run some, you know, test cases, effectively to throw a spanner in the works to stop these repossessions. So we ran a number of those cases, and as a result, in mid-2011, repossessions were effectively stopped in the state. And that continued. There were no repossessions really until 2014. But in the meantime, things had moved on apace. There was the establishment of the Insolvency Service. There was the ramping up of the consumer protection systems. And so we then moved from being pure legal to, you know, to providing insolvency
advice
service
and
advisory
yeah,
services
okay.
and negotiation services.
Okay, Lorcan O'Connor, I suppose in some ways Ross Maguire has kind of nearly introduced you as well in that.
Certainly in part. A condition of the Troika bailout several years ago was that the country would modernise the personal insolvency legislation that was in place. And it's hard to believe that several years ago, the only solution somebody had in Ireland if they couldn't pay their debts was to go bankrupt. And that bankruptcy lasted for a lifetime. There was no end point. Now bankruptcy is only 1 year, and we have three other alternative to bankruptcy solutions available, including what's called a personal insolvency arrangement, and that's specifically designed to try and keep somebody in their home. And of the cases that we have dealt with so far, 90% of those have been successful in keeping the roof over the individual's heads.
Okay, and Brendan Burgess?
Well, back in 1999, I set up the consumer website askaboutmoney.com, and mortgages, interest rates, borrowings and arrears have always been a feature of the market. So, you know, we've always been talking about and helping people who had problems. Obviously, it was much lower level. Then when it got more serious, we gave advice, specific advice to people on how to deal with the banks when they were in arrears. This is before the code of conduct and mortgage arrears or anything like that. And in 2010, I was a member of the Cooney Group, which was the government's expert group on mortgage arrears. So I've been working on this issue for at least 20 years, but I don't just work on behalf of a narrow group of people in difficulty with their mortgage. I'm actually concerned about the broader picture, people in Ireland who are paying twice the mortgage rate that they should be because they're paying for other people's mortgages.
Okay. This, I suppose that's an introduction to kind of your own background and how you kind of fall into and deal with this issue. And we'll come to a whole host and a range of issues over the course of the programme this morning. I think for listeners listening, we're all aware of the impact of the economic downturn in terms of the effect that it had on the economy and on families and their livelihoods. Many people left in situations, you know, where they couldn't pay their mortgage and ultimately in some cases actually lost their homes. Others were obviously unable to make the repayments and are still trying to do that. Just what does the current mortgage landscape look at the minute, Brendan Burgess?
The current landscape really is that most people, 120,000 mortgages have been rescheduled by the lenders. So people who got into difficulty, the vast majority of people who get into difficulty have been responsible. They've gone into their lenders, they've engaged with their lenders and they've got a deal. Unfortunately, Ross was successful in the High Court and got a lot of these repossessions stopped. And we don't allow repossessions in this country. And there is a small minority of people, maybe 3% to 5%, that'd be about 20,000 borrowers. Once they realise that there's no sanction, if they don't pay their mortgage, then they just don't pay their mortgage.
Okay, Ross McGuire,
and somebody else has to pay for that, unfortunately.
Okay, Ross McGuire, do you want to respond? Just give us your, I suppose, even in responding to that, and just your own assessment of the current situation. Where are we now in 2018?
I mean, we are on the path to recovery. So this was an unprecedented event. Up to 2008, Irish people always pay their mortgage. It was just taken as a fact. In fact, when the external banks were beginning to come in back in 2004, one of the things they were saying to their investors was, these guys always pay their mortgage and there's no way for them not to pay their mortgage. And then we fell off a cliff. So that has the landscape has changed dramatically. And I think that there's three or four major events or major criteria which are changing things. The first is the recovering economy. People are now in a much better position than they were, say, 4 or 5 years ago. So people whose circumstances were such they simply couldn't have afforded a mortgage back in 2010, 2011, are now perhaps in a better situation. The second, and Lorcan will talk about, is the personal insolvency system. I believe that to be, you know, Ireland has some of the most robust, the strongest systems in the world, coming from one of the worst systems to one of the best systems in the world, to specifically deal with the mortgage arrears problem. And then, of course, as Brendan pointed out, the banks themselves are better at engaging and are engaging. And there are undoubtedly a group of what is known as strategic defaulters. That are people who are not paying their mortgage or not paying what they could. And in a way, the banks have not been good in dealing with that group. And I think I would agree with Brendan, the time has come now, given the economy's there, given the insolvency system is there and the protections are there, the time has come to deal with the problem. That includes dealing with strategic defaulters.
And just on that point that Brendan mentioned, and you were responding to it there, Ross McGuire, that idea of people who are maybe perhaps strategically not paying now back on, not paying their mortgage, I suppose, their monthly repayments. Why is that? Like, are they genuine cases or are they people who are taking advantage?
It's across the board of people who are completely taking advantage. And then also there are people whose lifestyles, they're used to a certain lifestyle. They know that if they only pay half, they'll be okay because the banks won't get around to dealing with them. And so you just get into that slipstream of not really dealing with the issue. So I do think that the time has come for us as a country, because it does have, there's no such thing, this isn't victimless. As Brendan is right, if I'm not paying my mortgage, that is having an effect on other people or on future borrowers. So we do need to deal with it as a country. And I think we have over sentimentalized, we're over sentimental in our approach to it. I think we need to crack a little whip at this stage and say we need to deal with it. And I'm, even though I was very much a borrower person back in 2011, 2012, and we were setting out to stop the system, has now changed.
Okay.
And I believe we should get on and fix this problem.
Just before we go into the ways in terms of how we can fix it and what new, I suppose, parameters can be put in to try and take those people that are taking advantage of the system to maybe remove them from the market or how to deal with them. Just Lorcan O'Connor is the Director of Insolvency Service of Ireland. Just what's your response, I suppose, so far to what you've heard this morning?
Well, I think during the time that our legislation was passed that established the Insolvency Service of Ireland, there was a lot of talk about moral hazard and will the introduction of our legislation cause more people to refuse or not pay down their loans when they have an ability to do so. And I suppose that's a concern that you would see often in any country when they're developing their own legislation in this area. But as a result of that, I think our legislation is carefully balanced. There's a number of consequences for people who either create artificial circumstances before seeking relief under our solutions or in some other shape or form avoid paying their obligations when they can. And so, for example, bankruptcy in Ireland at the moment, 1 year. But if you don't cooperate, that can be extended to 15 years. And we have extended a number of cases where the bankruptcy term is much longer than it might otherwise be. And also, there are consequences for our other solutions, ultimately where the debtor could be fined or even imprisoned. But I think it's equally important, while this is a small category of people,
have we any idea of a figure on this?
Well, I can tell you in terms of bankruptcy, we're dealing with about 600 a year and the extensions that
we
seek.
So these are people, sorry, who are actually being declared or looking to be declared as a bankrupt?
Correct. About 600 a year. 600. And we would only seek, certainly last year, to extend the bankruptcies in around a dozen cases. In relation to our personal insolvency arrangements, which does deal with the mortgages, it would be even a smaller percentage in that case where we come across issues with regards to debtor behaviour. So I'm not suggesting it doesn't exist. but it certainly is in the minority of the cases that we see. And I think the other important thing to bear in mind, and it goes to Brendan's earlier comment that 120,000 cases have already been dealt with on an informal basis. None of those were being done until the Insolvency Service of Ireland was established. And the reason for that was actually quite simple. If I was a borrower and I knew that the writing was on the wall, I wasn't going to be able to pay my mortgage next month, I might have rung up the bank. And the bank would have said back, we'll meet with you when it suits us, or we've got bigger problems to be looking at now, or if we do meet, here is what you're going to have to do. And the debtor had no power behind their negotiating position because they had no alternative, because bankruptcy was for life. Now, as a result of the establishment of the Insolvency Service, that negotiation is on a level playing field, because the debtor can say, here I am, I'm telling you that I'm not going to be able to pay my debts. Let's see, can we reach a reasonable compromise?
And that's fair
enough. Both
sides'
interest.
People will, there is a way you can work
around
this.
And if you don't, I have an alternative. I can go to the Insolvency Service of Ireland and ensure that a reasonable solution can be imposed as opposed to
being
negotiated. I think it's very important to point out the banks were engaging with the borrowers long before the Code of Conduct and Mortgage Arrears and long before the Insolvency Service. And generally speaking, when banks went in, or borrowers went into banks and said, I have difficulties, I mean, they did get rescheduled mortgages. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Some of that was informal. Like, people could pick up the phone and say, listen, I have a difficulty, but I can meet my repayments over 25 years instead of 20. And the banks were just doing that and doing it very easily. Unfortunately, the Code of Conduct and Mortgage Arrears, and I hold up my hands here, I was part of the design of that with the expert group on mortgage arrears. We brought in a ridiculously complicated mortgage arrears resolution process. So even for a simple renegotiation, it's very extensive.
Okay.
But banks don't want to repossess houses. People want people to pay their mortgages or to pay what they can.
Okay, let me just bring just Lorcan O'Connor from the Insolvency Service back in.
I wouldn't fully agree with Brendan in the sense that my experience certainly was that there wasn't engagement at a large level prior to our establishment. And the reason for that was simply agreement couldn't be reached as to what would be reasonable living expenses, whether or not somebody could take health insurance and so on. You're right, but it is a historic point. Prior to taking up this job, I worked in corporate insolvency for about 15 years, and certainly the ability to engage with your borrower, or with your lender, was difficult at that time, because simply the banks were, you know, dealing with much larger problems in terms of their balance sheets, and they weren't able to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. But I think in any event, that's somewhat of a historic point, because now we have moved on. The landscape is very different.
Just on that point of the landscape, if somebody can, just in terms of kind of giving us the stats and the cold, the cases really behind the columns of statistics, but how many people roughly are we dealing with that are currently in mortgage arrears at the moment, 2018? And how many, I suppose, repossessions have we had?
Well, there's about 90,000 in arrears. Between 30,000 and 40,000 of that are long-term arrears. That is over 3 years, and often that goes out to 6 or 7 years.
These are the downturn in the economy people, really?
Yeah, these are people who've been in arrears really since the beginning.
Okay.
In terms of repossessions, they're still very few. Ireland has historically and currently a very low level of repossessions. There are, I think, 15 or 16,000 cases where banks have brought repossession proceedings, but the bringing of repossession proceedings doesn't mean there will be a repossession. Mm. Even the making of a repossession order doesn't mean there'll be a repossession. The actual repossessions, on an involuntary basis, that is where the bank gets an order of repossession and enforces against the wishes of the borrower, is in the hundreds. And given the scale of the problem, you'd expect that to be a little higher. So I think, you know, the bottom line is there's still a serious problem out there, and there are very low levels of repossessions. And I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think generally people would want us to be able to solve this problem without large-scale repossessions. I don't think there will be large-scale repossessions, but I do think the time has come now for us to deal with the problem. And I would disagree with Brendan as well, that when the banks were on their own before the introduction, for example, of the insolvency system, They were looking at short-term solutions, kick it down the road. They also wouldn't take into account the borrower's other circumstances. So I may have a mortgage debt, but I also inevitably have other debts. And sometimes I'll prioritise those other debts because they give me liquidity. I might pay my credit card because now I have access to cash again. Well, if I pay my mortgage, the money's gone,
as it were. Isn't that one of the issues, I mean, even for people listening? And I know from talking to people, even myself, that have now sort of become the accidental landlords because they're in negative equity. These sort of young people starting their lives in their early to mid-30s that were affected, obviously, by the downturn in the economy. And in many cases, what they're facing in terms of anything that might be up for repossession is what is their family home? Like, they don't have a list of properties.
Just to put a bit of perspective on this, approximately 120,000 mortgages have been rescheduled by the Irish banks. And fewer than 10,000 people have lost their homes, either through repossessions or through voluntary surrenders or even abandonments. If anybody is in mortgage difficulties at the moment, go in and talk to MABS or talk to one of the voluntary groups like New Beginnings. You know, you're not going to lose your home if you engage and pay something. And that is a really important thing to point out.
I know it's Lorcan O'Connor, you wanted to come in as well, just on that point.
Just for your listeners' benefit, to know the latest position with regards to repossession statistics. There are basically three stages to a repossession of a family home. The first is where the bank lodge a civil bill in the courts, circuit court. And I suppose that's the final opportunity, or largely speaking, the final opportunity for a debtor to re-engage with the bank. And we're looking at about 260 cases per month last year.
260 per month?
Per month. But that's the first stage in the process. And that is on a downward trend. It's 25% down compared to a couple of years back. The second stage is where the court issues an order for repossession. And that is only 73 per month last year, also on a downward trend, down about 30% on a couple of years ago. But that in itself doesn't necessarily mean you lose your home. There are still further opportunities to consult with the personal insolvency practitioner or other advocates to see if anything can be done. The final stage is what's called an execution order. And that is at a rate of 40 per month in 2017, but that's at only 50% of the rate in 2015. So they're already historically low by international standards, but they're also falling and falling dramatically. So there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks around a tsunami, or even recent years around a tsunami of repossessions. Certainly the facts don't support that. Now, that's not to say an individual getting a letter tomorrow morning saying that we're about to commence repossession proceedings isn't extremely stressful, but there are supports available through Awalia, which ensures you've got free access to the personal insolvency practitioner that you need, and all other supports. That help is there.
Can I just before we take a quick break, can I just ask Lorcan on that? Those repossessions you're talking about, are they very specifically in the cases of what's described as the family home, or can they often be maybe perhaps an order to repossess where it's a second or a third property?
Certainly those numbers would include some non-family homes, but typically what you would see where it's a non-family home is that a receiver would be appointed.
Okay, so that's if somebody had a second.
So you wouldn't necessarily go through the repossession.
And just before we
process.
Go to the break, Brendan, just on that.
Yeah, the scandal of this is there are 11,000 buy-to-let mortgages in arrears over 2 years, and the banks can't repossess them.
And why
so
is
these
that?
It's just the legal system is just so completely blocked up. But here are people who are collecting rent, and you know how high rents are at the moment, and they're paying nothing to the bank. That should be fast track.
Just as a legal expert, Ross Maguire, can I just ask you to respond to the kind of impact those buy to let mortgages that the impact that's having now on the mortgage arrears issue?
Well, again, back in the day during the Celtic Tiger, people were encouraged to buy second or third or fourth homes by way of pensions, and there was a sort of a legal issue as to whether or not they were being treated as investment properties or family homes. They were all lumped under this concept of home mortgages. The result has been that where people have been defaulting on these buy-to-lets, they're not family homes now, they're investment properties. Sometimes, in order to get the property, the bank has to go through a long repossession proceeding. And Brennan's pointing out, and he's correct, that during that time rent is being paid and the owner is taking that rent and not paying the mortgage.
And I can hear people listening to the radio this morning screaming at the radio saying, that's not fair.
And they are right to scream because it is utterly unfair. I don't know how big a problem it is, but it's certainly going on to an extent. I mean, in a way, when the funds come into town, they just stop all of this because they will not accept this. But it has been going on for some years and it's wrong. And I think the psychology of it is that somebody thinks, I'm going to lose this property anyway. Maybe I'll be there'll be a short of 100,000, maybe it'll be 150,000. I don't care. I'm going to be bankrupt anyway. So I might as well just take the cash
in
the meantime.
It.
Yeah. And the problem, and I think this is a key to this, that where you have the problem not being dealt with, that kind of strategic default and gross unfairness is allowed to take place.
Okay.
And whilst I still believe that in 2011, 12, 13, during the real crisis, there was a room for some sort of moratorium, now we're in a different stage and we need to get on and end this problem.
OK, Lorcan O'Connor, how can we end the problem?
Well,
we're
certainly
talking, of course, about the
message for people in difficulty and in fear of losing their home is to engage with their lender. If you don't engage with your lender, you will ultimately end up possibly losing your home. So engagement is the first stage. But as I said earlier, through Awalia, there is a number of supports available, both at the repossession courts in terms of legal advice, access to free legal advice, and free access to a personal insolvency practitioner. And what a personal insolvency practitioner can do for you is, in the first instance, seek an adjournment to the repossession hearing. And that's the only explicit statutory protection contained in the legislation that governs the repossession process. Secondly, they can look at your circumstances and restructure your mortgage. And case law to date shows that if you're able to service the current market value of your property, then a personal insolvency practitioner can definitely reach a solution for you. Now, what I mean by that is, let's say you've got a mortgage at 200 grand, but you can service 100 grand of that today because you've got less income than you might have when you took the mortgage out first.
And perhaps if you lost your job.
Indeed, absolutely. If that property is only worth 100, a personal insolvency practitioner can definitely secure you a deal. If you can maybe only service 60 or 70, which is less than the current market value, it is more difficult, but there's mortgage to rent as a solution or other solutions. And the final element that the personal insolvency practitioner can also do to help you is offer you the holistic solution. It goes back to the earlier point that it's very rare that somebody would only have a mortgage. They're likely to also have a credit card, an overdraft, a personal loan and so on. And if you solve one without looking at the others, invariably, the overall deal falls down very quickly. Okay. You need the holistic solution.
Brendan Burgess, you, I suppose, brought up this issue as you described it as a scandal regarding the buy-to-let mortgages. What do you see as the solution now to this?
Oh, the solution is that we have to change our mentality, and the politicians need to give a lead on this and say, if people don't pay their mortgage, particularly the buy-to-let mortgage, the banks must be allowed to repossess them on a fast-track basis. You know, you should go down on a Thursday or a Friday to the Dublin courts or any of the circuit courts and watch the repossession cases. I mean, it's absolutely scandalous, the leniency that's shown. I mean, borrowers who've paid nothing for years and they come in. I mean, I was there last week and a woman said, well, we'd problems with our credit card, but that's sorted out now. We've paid the credit union and we've paid the tax. So we're ready now to pay our mortgage. And they got an adjournment. Now, I would have said, and I've always said to people, you must prioritise your mortgage over your other debts. But in fact, my advice was completely wrong because people were better off paying all the other unsecured debts at higher interest rates because they didn't face any risk of repossession. Yeah, okay. And that, to me, is a scandal.
I just want to bring you in, Ross.
Yeah, I think that when people are faced with debt, it's always over many different debts. It's not just one debt. And, you know, people are not necessarily savvy as to how to deal with it. So they deal with whoever screams loudest. The credit cards will scream loud. The credit unions will scream loud. They'll get paid over the mortgage bank that will go very slowly. And that has been a problem in the system as to how to deal with these debts. Under the personal insolvency system, it's designed to deal with lots of different debts at one go. So if, say, for example, somebody has a buy-to-let that they just can't service, and that's sold and there's a residual debt, you know, a shortfall from it. That shortfall can be dealt with in the personal insolvency system. And I think, you know, I've just seen statistics that you guys put out about a year ago, the average write-down for unsecured debt is sort of in the 80%. Is that right, Laura?
Yeah, even higher than that. It would probably be north of 90% for the unsecured debts. And the average, certainly in relation to mortgages, where there is a write-down, is circa 90 to 100,000 euro. But what it is all there to do is to reach an accommodation between both sides, the debtor who owes the money and the creditor who is owed the money. So it's whatever the appropriate sustainable solution that is required is provided for. So I don't necessarily always focus on the amount of write-off. It is just whatever is sustainable to return the borrower to solvency.
Across all of their debt. So when you've got a system in place that does protect borrowers, Brendan is right, that we can't now step back and just watch people gaming the system.
Yeah, okay.
That has to stop.
I just wanted to focus on another specific issue, and we mentioned it, Lorcan O'Connor, you mentioned it, the idea of the changes to the bankruptcy legislation where people, I suppose, will serve that time, if you like, for 1 year as being a bankrupt. For a lot of people, they find that very difficult and it doesn't sit well with them, just purely because they maybe spent the last 8-10 years since the downturn in the economy struggling. Maybe one person in the household lost their income or their job and they struggled for a number of years to make all of the repayments that had to be paid. And while now somebody else who maybe has gone through the process, while it is very difficult and a difficult process psychologically and mentally, and they've been declared as a bankrupt, they serve their 1 year, and many people would see it that they're getting that fresh start, that chance to start again. What do you say to those people that have an issue with that?
I can certainly understand it, but again, going to an earlier point about the moral hazard being considered at the time our legislation was introduced, there's a lot of checks and balances there to ensure that nobody is allowed to game the system. And I suppose another reason why perhaps some of your listeners today might be saying, well, you know, why do I have to struggle and others get all of these benefits, is in part because we don't always have a balanced discussion. It's interesting that in large part the focus so far this morning has been on those that won't pay as opposed to those that can't pay. And what I'm saying is that certainly in terms of the cases that we see either on the bankruptcy side or on the other solutions, is that those that are so-called gaming the system or refusing to pay are in the vast minority. We are only talking about single percentage digits and in the low single percentage digits.
Okay.
So we're not seeing evidence of that. In terms of people saying, well, look, I'm struggling, you know, I've cut back on health insurance or I've cut back on anything bar the absolute essentials for living, certainly, I can understand where they're coming from, but my point back would be simply to say nobody would voluntarily wish to go bankrupt. There are consequences. Also, you are living on the reasonable living expenses set out by the Insolvency Service of Ireland, anything but luxury.
What would they be on average, Lorcan?
Well, it varies depending on your family complement, whether you need a car, kids and so on. But for an individual living on their own, let's say in need of a car, it's around 1,000 euro a month, plus whatever accommodation costs would be required.
So it'd be 1,000 after rent or whatever is paid?
Plus rent on top of that, yes.
Okay. Brendan Burgess, what's your view of that?
No, just on the bankruptcy issue, I mean, I don't, you know, bankruptcy is mainly for big business debts and it usually does involve a family home as well. But I think that most people, I mean, if I go bankrupt, my debt is wiped out, but I lose the title or I pass the title over to Lorcan on my family home, except that if I have a joint owner such as a wife, well, she is fully responsible for the debt. And, so it's bankruptcy is not a good approach to the family home. It can be if you want to get rid of the family home, like if you're in deep negative equity, you want to get rid of everything, you have lots of business debts. Bankruptcy is the quick solution. You're out after a year and you can start again. But if you want to hold on to the family home, it's probably not the best solution. The personal insolvency arrangement is a better solution for it. But, I mean, all these solutions are there. As Ross said, we went from the worst to one of the best. I mean, we went certainly from the worst, like bankruptcy was forever, to a situation whereby, you know, I know Lorcan says there are, you know, checks in place to avoid people gaming the system. But the system is such now that people who did strategically default in the past and who gamed the system in the past can avail of PIAs and bankruptcy. Now, I don't resent that at the moment. We've got to move on. But 1 year bankruptcy, by the way, there was 1 year bankruptcy in England.
Yeah.
So Irish people were just going to England and that. So it is better, a bit like the... Can I mention the abortion issue here? It's a bit like that. We should deal with ourselves.
Okay. You know? Can I just want to bring you just before we move on, Ross McGuire, just on that issue.
Yeah, I mean, Lorcan's right. Nobody voluntarily goes into bankruptcy, but and in order to self adjudicate in bankruptcy in Ireland, you first of all have to try the personal insolvency system or have made reasonable efforts in that regard. So there are three criteria to bankrupting yourself. One is that your debts exceed your assets by 20,000 euro, two that you've made, that you're insolvent, and three that you've made efforts to deal with it through the insolvency system. Then if you are declared bankrupt, you lose all your assets bar the necessaries of life. Your debts are written off, you're reviewed for a year, and after that year, you're then free to start again. And I think, you know, it's a kind of an American approach to life, and it's been supported now in Europe. But it makes a lot of sense. Where the thing is broken, there's no point in just looking at it forever. We need to move on. And that's good for the individual, but it's also good for the economy generally to have people moving on. But it has to be in a structured way. And I'm very supportive of these new systems.
Can I just ask Brendan Burgess, if we don't allow repossessions in Ireland, what, you know, or not that we don't allow them, but if we don't have, I suppose, if we hold back on the number of repossessions that we have, what effect is that having on people that are in arrears?
Well, the first effect it has is that if somebody realises that they're not going to lose their home if they don't pay their mortgage, a small percentage of them, I'm only talking about 5% of people in such situations, won't pay their mortgage. And it becomes increasingly difficult to deal with a problem. If you put a problem of debt off for 5 years, it becomes increasingly difficult and may become irresolvable. So if you said, if the government said, we are going to take the brakes off the repossession process here for people who are paying nothing and have paid nothing for, say, at least 2 years, well, people would suddenly start paying their mortgage. They would prioritise their mortgage over going on holidays. They'd prioritise their mortgage over maybe paying unsecured debts. So that is the first thing. But the second thing is the banks would no longer have the excuse when I campaign on high mortgage rates in Ireland and the banks say, what do you expect? Look at the high levels of arrears we have and look at the fact we can't repossess homes. Mortgages in Ireland are unsecured lending and therefore we have to charge an extra 1.5%. An Irish borrower with a mortgage of 200,000, say, is paying 250 euros per month interest more than they should be paying. And the main cause of that is the arrears. If we got rid of the arrears problem by allowing repossessions, then 300,000 people with mortgages would benefit.
Okay, Lorcan O'Connor, you made the distinction earlier of the difference between people who can't pay and the people who won't pay. But how do we sort of separate those in trying to deal with the number of people that are in arrears?
Well, it's enshrined within our legislation. The personal insolvency practitioner who delivers these solutions undertakes a number of statutory checks. So they do a due diligence. They look to see whether or not an artificial set of circumstances have been created in advance. And as I said, a creditor then has an opportunity to actually put up their hand and say, actually, this person is not entitled to this relief because they've done such and such. But also, if I look into a bankruptcy case, for example, if somebody diverted funds towards their pension, that can be reversed if they entered into a transaction with somebody to sort of sell an asset in the weeks or the months before bankruptcy, that can be reversed and there are other consequences. But I'm going to keep reinforcing this point because I think it's important. All of that is to deal with only low single-digit percentage of cases. So therefore, I think the message should be for those people who are in fear of losing their home, that there are the supports out there. It's free and a personal insolvency practitioner can return you to solvency, can keep you in your home in 90% of cases and give you the holistic solution covering all of your debts.
Just Ross McGuire.
I would just say that whilst the cases that come into Lorcan, very few of them are, you know, gaming the system, there are lots of people who haven't come into Lorcan or who haven't come into New Beginning or haven't done anything who potentially, I think the level of strategic default in that group is higher. So I think two things, there's a carrot and stick approach needs to happen here. There needs to be a stick and say to people, this is over now. It's time to resolve this issue. And then the carrot is that there are systems out there that can help people. But if people won't engage, we can't be overly sentimental. We need to move things on. And that's where Brendan is right. There needs to be a system of repossession if people will not engage. And the difficulty of this country is because I believe of our approach to it and of kind of catch cries about vulture funds and all the rest, there are more and more barriers put up to allow banks enforce against strategically defaulting borrowers, and that's not in anybody's interest.
Okay, just Brendan Murray, just very quickly before we take the next break.
I want to clarify one thing. I want to see the government and taxpayer helping people who are in genuine difficulties, who would, for example, if they were renting, qualify for the housing assistance payment or for rent supplement. I want them to be getting mortgage interest supplement. I want the government to pay the mortgage on behalf of those who genuinely can't pay. There aren't that many of them, but there's some of them. And I want to see, we had a great thing called mortgage interest supplement, and that was scrapped because it was seen as a subsidy to the bank. But we spend $1.5 billion a year on helping people who rent their homes, but we pay nothing at all to borrowers who can't afford to pay the interest, which is really just rent on money.
There seems to be kind of a narrative at the moment that the idea of the vulture funds, that they're kind of ruthless. They're sometimes described as being pretty clinical. Just what's your view, Lorcan O'Connor, if I can ask you first?
Well, I think it depends. And it isn't a straightforward answer that I could give to you. But certainly in the event, for example, that you were looking to have a deal done on your mortgage and you wanted to hand back the keys, the vulture funds are probably the best people to be dealing with because they have bought the loan at a discount and they will be more than happy to probably write off any negative equity or any balance on the loan if they get the property back. The question then is, well, what if you don't want to lose your home and you want to try and restructure your mortgage? It is true to say that the business model of a fund would typically be to buy the loan at a cheap price and to try and crystallize that, sell it, move on to the next opportunity as quickly as possible. Trying to restructure the mortgage doesn't fit easily within that business model. But through the personal insolvency legislation, the funds don't have a choice. They have to engage with the personal insolvency practitioner. And we have had a number of successful cases during the course of 2017 where mortgage restructures have been put in place over the will of funds as well as over the will of retail banks. So the point now is that whether your loan is owned by a retail bank or a fund, the protections that are afforded to you through the personal insolvency legislation are the same. So to that extent, there's very little difference.
Very little difference. Ross Maguire.
I think I slightly disagree with Lorcan on the view of the business model of the fund. The funds, their business model, in essence, is to buy non-performing loans, to make the loan performing, and then to sell the loan back to the banks. And that's what's happening. So, for example, Bank of Ireland have recently acquired a big lump of performing loans from one of the funds. Repossession enforcement is a backstop for them. So, in other words, if they can't fix your loan, they'll have to go the repossession route. But that's really a zero-sum game for them because it's going to take a long time. And it's not where they want to go.
But I'd imagine that doesn't fit their model.
It doesn't fit their model. So the idea, and people do say this, that when a fund buys your loan, they're only interested in your property. That is untrue. And it's untrue demonstrably because when you look at the repossession lists, the banks are primarily in the repossession lists. It's not so much the funds. The question is, how do they fix your loan? And they tend to be stricter than the banks. For example, one of them, they don't really like doing capitalization of arrears. So what happens with the banks is that if you have run up arrears, sometimes they'll say, I'll tell you what, we'll take those arrears and we'll make them part of your loan. So say, for example, your loan is 200,000, but you have 20,000 arrears. Your new loan will be 220,000 and you'll pay that over the period of time.
Yeah, so the money you didn't pay is just going to be added on nearly as if it's interest.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, what the funds have said is when they've done those restructures, they haven't worked. So they now say, no, we want you to pay that 20,000 separately to your mortgage, whether it's to get it from family and friends or wherever it is, or pay it down quickly. And they put people under pressure. That's their business model. And they've experienced worldwide of doing this, that sometimes when you ratchet up the pressure, people actually find ways of sorting out their own problems. Now, So they're not, these are not sentimental guys. These are guys who will put you under pressure. But their job is to fix the loan as opposed to repossess. Importantly, there's two other things I'd say. Lorcan is 100% right. In fact, in some ways, it's probably easier to get deals in insolvency with the funds than it is with the banks. And there's kind of particular reasons for that. But certainly the funds are as exposed to the insolvency system as the banks are. And secondly, when you look at something like mortgage to rent, even though the funds have a small amount of the overall loan book, they've been responsible for, I think, 80% of all mortgage to rents. Mortgage to rents is where the banks sell the property to an approved housing body who then provide social housing to the former borrower in their home. It's a way of keeping people in their homes, people in distress. The funds are responsible for most of that. So why would you then say, the argument that goes in the face of the argument that they're just interested in getting your house and throwing you out on the street? That's just a narrative which is out there, but it's not borne out by the facts.
Yeah, because my understanding was that there hasn't been any rise in the number of applications for repossession since really Vulture Fund started.
No, there haven't been. Again, it's not a commercial, it wouldn't make any commercial sense for them to be going like that. They want to fix the loan in an agreement with you, sell the loan back to the banks and move on. And these performing loans are very valuable things in the commercial world.
Can Brendan I just Burgess, yeah. explain? I'm working with a group of people. They had mortgages with Bank of Scotland, Ireland. They got into difficulty, right? They went into arrears, as lots of people did. They engaged with Bank of Scotland, Ireland, and those mortgages were sold to a vulture fund called Tanager. And Tanager is doing exactly as Ross is saying. They're saying, we don't offer arrears capitalisation. We want you to sell your home and we want the money. So what's actually happening is these people, they won't be going near Lorcan. They're not insolvent. In most cases, they're paying the full mortgage, but they've got this historical arrears figure, which they can't address. But they're paying the full mortgage. They're paying far more than the interest on the mortgage. Those loans will be paid off over the next 10 or 15 years. If they were with any of the banks that we revile so much, AIB, Bank of Ireland, Permanent TSB, they would be given a restructure in the morning, and the banks would love that sort of business. But these funds, Tanager in particular, is putting these people under extraordinary pressure. And it's okay for me to say, well, they won't get a repossession order, they won't. But when a borrower gets legal proceedings issued against them, it is extremely stressful. So at the same time as I want to see fast-tracked repossession, I'm arguing in an article in today's Sunday Independent that if somebody is paying at least the interest on the mortgage, the lender should not be allowed to issue legal proceedings against them. Because if I'm paying the interest on my mortgage, well then, as far as I'm concerned, that mortgage is sustainable. It's profitable for the bank and there's no need for anybody else to get involved, like the Insolvency Service or anyone else.
Can I say two things about that? First of all, Brendan's wrong. If there's arrears there which can't be paid, the person is technically insolvent and therefore they can go to Lorcan. Okay. Secondly, if somebody's only paying interest on a loan which should be capital as well, that is a non-performing loan and therefore it acts as a lead weight on the bank's balance sheet. In other words, it's okay to say in a kind of a layman's language, well, you're getting the interest, that should be enough. It actually isn't enough when it comes to how banks are regulated and is a problem for the banks. But most importantly, if somebody is facing difficulty with Tanager and because of arrears, they are most likely technically insolvent and they can go into the insolvency system
They might be technically insolvent. Some of these people have 20 grand arrears on a property worth 400,000 and a mortgage of 200,000. So what is the solution that they can go to? They can go into a personal insolvency arrangement and they can have that mortgage rescheduled through that way. There'll be no debt write-off or anything like that. So maybe a solution, but they're going to be facing probably 4 or 5 years living under a personal insolvency arrangement. I mean, this should not be allowed. People, like, in my view, somebody who's facing difficulty meeting their repayments, but who has a lot of equity in their home, is not insolvent. They might be technically insolvent under the legislation, but is that the right use of the legislation?
Personal insolvency arrangements can range anything from 1 day to up to 6 years, and that's really down to what it is that you can offer to your creditors. So somebody that can maybe offer an additional €100 every month for 6 years, then your arrangement will be 6 years. But if you have somebody that really their primary need is for a restructure of the mortgage, that tends to be a 1 day or a 1 month arrangement. And it's basically used as the mechanism to deliver the restructure and to deal with the unsecured debts.
Okay. Can I just ask on a final point, just maybe around the house and just briefly as well, if you don't mind, Ross Maguire, in 10 years time, where would you like to see where we are in 10 years time?
I would like us with the arrears issue resolved. There'll always be, you know, in any functioning market, there will always be arrears, but the general arrears issue solved, more competition in the market to provide credit, and people, the next generation, having access to credit at reasonable levels. That's what I'd like to see.
Lorcan O'Connor?
Well, we have yet to reach even our long-term equilibrium level of cases. We've already helped 6,000 people, but we should be dealing with that almost on an annual basis. And that's when the economy is on an even keel. So we've yet to get to that point.
Why
but
I think it's
relatively new. There's a lot of noise out there. Some people are frightened to approach a personal insolvency practitioner. But my message this morning is for anybody in difficulty, in fear of losing their home, go to our website, backontrack.ie, or phone our helpline, which is 076 106 4200. And we can give you all of the information you need and put you in touch with a personal insolvency practitioner that will solve your difficulties.
And when you say you don't think you've reached or dealt with the true number or reflective number of people out there, do you think what's the real reason for that? Is it that there's a hesitation to people?
Well, the experience in all other countries when they introduced these kind of modernisations to their legislation around personal insolvency was that it did take time to gain traction and to get to a point of sort of steady state. So that will take time, but it is a standard feature of the sort of banking lending landscape. So I think once you have a functioning insolvency element to the overall banking landscape, you can return to normality, return to the sort of standard interest rates being charged on mortgage lending and get to where we all need to be.
Okay, Brendan Burgess, where are we going to be in 10 years?
I think it's very odd that we want to see a bigger use of the insolvency service. We have restructured 120,000 mortgages, and that is a much better way to deal with things than people going insolvent and going bankrupt. So I find it unusual to see the adverts from the insolvency service saying we want more people to be insolvent.
That's not quite fair. We're not looking to get more people than need our assistance. But what
it's
I'm
the
saying
engagement.
Is the international comparisons, when you adjust for population size, suggest that in all other circumstances, we should be dealing with more people than we do at the moment.
Our banks are much more flexible than any other banks around the world in restructuring mortgages without the need for insolvency.
Just very finally, have to wrap up. Just where ultimately, Brendan, do you think we should be, or what's the next key issue the government has to deal with in addressing all of this?
Oh, I want them to see them fast track the repossessions, help the people who genuinely can't pay with mortgage interest supplement, and go after the people who won't pay, particularly the buy-to-lets.
Okay, listen, there's an awful lot there to try and digest from this morning. My thanks to our panel for joining us in studio. Brendan Burgess of the Fair Mortgage Rates Campaign, Lorcan O'Connor, the Director of the Insolvency Service of Ireland, and Ross Maguire, Senior Counsel with the New Beginning Financial Services. My thanks to our production team, Stephen Jordan, Aidan McKelvey and Marianne Kennedy on sound. And I'll be back again from next Sunday morning from 8. But for me, Andrea Gilligan, have a great day.
Between the Lines on News Talk.